Good afternoon. Welcome to people, you know, because we're running everywhere.
Like a dog.
So my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere tractor and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And if you want to get a hold of them on the phone, it's 226-9226. And
so what if I just got a note that said PG&E says they might shut off the power in several areas,
to be determined. When's that happening?
Of the North State on Wednesday and Thursday of this week.
Well, you know, Pape Machinery could help you out with that because they have a full line of Honda generators
right now
in stock and ready to go. So go in and see them, and they can get you fixed up. So,
and you should do that before the power gets shut off.
Yeah.
Actually, just a hot tip there.
That way you won't need no stinking power. You could just hit your generator switch and just...
Keep all your food in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Don't have to make 900 pounds of jerky because you don't have a refrigerator anymore.
Yeah.
Heck with that.
Wrong.
Yeah, Pape Machinery.
Yeah, so anyway, we don't have any more detailed information than that about the PG&E thing, but if we do, we'll let you know. Today is November 17th, 2019, and sometimes I know we... Oh, Ashley, this just in. Do we have that for... We don't have a sound file on that, but that would be good.
Yeah.
PG&E says they are monitoring a potentially strong offshore wind event.
Oh, it's a wind event.
It's a wind event.
Huh.
Without the clowns,
get your
the balloons,
chairs.
The circus tent,
yeah.
None of that. It's not that kind of an event. Strong wind gust in excess of 50 miles per hour. Wow.
Yeah, with no rain in sight.
Yes.
Guess what?
And we've discussed this.
Yes,
that
watch
maybe
for
if
smoke.
We didn't spend $2.5 billion on green decalanser at this point because...
We haven't spent enough money to analyze it.
We are now in the throes of it. So we have done programs regarding this. We just did one. I don't have it up on my screen at the moment. But we spoke with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry, about this, I'm going to say 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I will...
it was November 3rd.
Was it?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Uh-huh. I have a photographic memory. Blackouts in the National...
Are you still using Polaroid, or have you moved to digital? For your photographs, I mean.
Analog.
Still having it developed at Crown Camera across the street?
Yeah, that's it.
Good one. That's all the fun we'll say I have about the power outage, because it's really not fun. So we have to have our fun now really quick before everybody gets angry.
It's amazing how dependent we are on electricity. You don't realize it until you don't have it. And then all of a sudden, life gets hard.
Yeah, kind of fascinating. Dr. Pry's been pushing that for years, and everybody kind of goes, eh, it's not a big emergency. Well, welcome to California, where it kind of is a big emergency. So just in case you have not joined us before... there is always a little customary screwing around at the beginning of the show. That being said, our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. He also served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. So he's mostly, you know, just been hanging out.
Yeah.
In Washington, D.C., doing everything. So he has
he's the go-to guy.
He sent us a list of possible topics for future shows if we wanted to do something other than EMP. And I'm like, I don't really know what any of those things are. We could do all those. All those things would be awesome. So today's program is going to kind of focus on two of the topics he had on his list. One was our vanishing republic. Is the impeachment inquiry the end of our constitutional republic? Kind of timely, so we thought maybe we should go down that road. And then the other one is Turkey, the Kurds, and the future of NATO. And all of that, we hear a lot about all of this on the news, but the problem is the news doesn't teach us anything for the most part, talks about it in two-minute increments, and they all say the same darn thing. So our goal is to kind of bring you the rest of the story, I guess, to hijack a phrase from Paul Harvey. Because if we're a little bit smarter about this, we're going to know what we're looking at. And I'll, if you'd like the rest of Dr. Pry's information, we have that all posted at wethepeopleradio.us, and an archive of the show will be posted afterward. You can listen; doesn't cost you anything. And got other shows on there for you by the same guest. So there you have it. That is all my part. I'm totally done.
That was a lot.
Look at that.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Pry. Sky's the limit for you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for being on. We appreciate it. Ton of information. I'm really curious about your take on NATO. We're starting to hear rumbles that...
Or we can start with the impeachment thing.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's all tangled up together, really. They've made this all sort of a conglomeration of stuff.
Sure. Well, your call. People may be more interested in the impeachment inquiry since that's going on every day. And intelligent people who are well read in the constitutional history of our republic, that may be obvious to them, but unfortunately, most Americans aren't familiar with their own history, and our schools don't teach our history anymore. And in the article you cited, Our Vanishing Republic, the fact of the matter is, I think a serious case can be made that as of the moment back in September when Nancy Pelosi announced the so-called impeachment inquiry, we really ceased to be a constitutional republic, because a constitutional republic requires everybody, including the two major political parties, to respect the Constitution. That's what makes you a constitutional republic. And if everybody doesn't play by the game, you know, whether it's the executive branch or the courts or in the Congress, one of the major two political parties, and it's the Democrats now, if they don't respect the Constitution and play by the rules and obey the law, then you don't have a constitutional republic. I think what we're in the middle of is basically a cold civil war to determine whether this country will come out of it on the other side as a constitutional republic or not.
Well, that's...
Even if they won't... That's, yes. Well, I didn't mean to talk over you.
No,
but
go ahead.
Those are the stakes. Those are how high the stakes are. You know, people have gotten so used to the Washington scandals over the ridiculous Mueller investigation and the absurd allegations that President Trump was a candidate of Russia, that I think that they are kind of fatigued, you know, with the notion of political scandal and sort of wave it away. But that's the bottom line of where we are. You know, our constitutional republic is not just at risk. It ceased to be while this illegal impeachment inquiry goes on. And, you know, if they succeed in changing presidents, I don't think that they will succeed in changing presidents by impeachment, but it could damage President Trump enough, which is what their goal is, so that they can win politically in the next elections.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if that happens, I don't think we can have confidence in the future that future elections will be fair and balanced or legitimate, because the party that will have succeeded in displacing President Trump by foul means, by what is essentially an unconstitutional and illegal impeachment, you know, will not hesitate to use that tool or whatever other instruments are necessary, including weaponizing the intelligence community and the Justice Department, you know, to make sure that they have political power. You know, I mean, that's what the Democrats are showing us, that they've become a totalitarian movement. I mean, that's what a totalitarian movement is. It's a movement that doesn't care about the law, doesn't care about constitutions. It does whatever it takes to get political power. So those are the stakes that we're in. Those are the stakes.
Well, when you mentioned the intelligence community, I think we've all kind of realized that if you don't get control of the intelligence community, that's a big tool for somebody to use to oust somebody they don't like, not necessarily just the president, pretty much anybody. If our intelligence community is going to work against us, against the American people, that is That's a dangerous place to go.
And when they work against a president who has been elected by the American people, and no one in the intelligence community has been elected by the American people.
Exactly.
Okay? See, and that's really...
All right, they're all part of the permanent bureaucracy that the founders were worried about, you know, when they were debating the Constitution and putting in checks and balances. Their greatest fear, you know, was that the government itself, the administrative state, would undermine our constitutional republic and usurp the power of our elected political leaders. And this has been happening, you know, in part because of the fault of Congress over many decades, you know, allowing an administrative state to grow up that through the regulatory process basically becomes lawmakers. And but now, with the politicization, the radical ideologies, leftist big government ideologies that are so prevalent in the U.S. government, to the point that they think that somebody like a President Trump is illegitimate, somebody who wants to come in and do things differently.
Yeah, how dare he?
Right, exactly.
Dr. You know, Pryor, we have to take a really quick...
Are we not where the founders were afraid we would arrive?
Oh,
you know, when basically the conflict is not just between political parties anymore, but it's between a political party that believes in big government, basically is the embodiment of big government, is allied with...
When we come back after this break, I do want to talk about the bureaucracy in the sense that I think what we're seeing now is like a sales pitch. Everything is about the, a career foreign service agent. We couldn't possibly replace them. How mean is that? I mean, all this is, it's like a weird human resources discussion.
People have to realize they don't make foreign policy.
There's that, too.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
I see the red moon horizon. I see trouble on the way. I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times today.
Especially if this continues. So, Dr. Pry, I think the one thing that really no one in the media is really tackling is that all these people work at the pleasure of the president because we elected the president. We didn't elect them. And somehow it's being made to look like these people set the policy and how dare we make changes. So you've been staffed for a number of different things. I mean, I'm sure you've actually done more than we read in your bio at the beginning. So as a person who's been on the staff side of these things, I mean, where does your influence start and where does it stop, legitimately?
Well, legitimately on the Constitution, I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, the president sets foreign policy. You know, that's his prerogative and that's his power and that's his responsibility. That's what he's supposed to do. All the rest of the executive branch, including the Department of Defense, the Department of State, they are to support the president's policies, to advise the president.
Whether they like them or not.
Yeah, that's right. But President Trump, unfortunately, bears some responsibility, too. I complain about this almost every day to friends, and they, you know, they agree
with
me, of course, because it's obvious. You know, because you know, the president, when he first came in, you know, he did not accept resignations that were tendered from the Obama administration.
Mm.
He didn't accept them, and he ended up appointing, also bringing into his administration many people who were basically never Trumpers or worked for people who were never Trumpers, and who did not support his election. And I think this was an example of someone learning on the job to be president, because he didn't understand that, you know, the staff, the people who come aboard, and the people who are there from the prior administration, are not truly professionals in the sense of the word the professional is used in the business community. You know, in the business community, a lawyer, for example, is a professional. And if you pay the lawyer enough money, he will argue, he will support your case in court or do what you want in terms of running your corporation. And if somebody else pays him money, he'll do the same thing and go in and do opposite policies and the rest. That's what a professional is in the business world. You know, what matters is money. And the people will use their talents to do whatever the boss wants. That's not that paradigm doesn't work in government, because most people who are in government, or at least the levels we're talking about, like ambassadorial levels and assistant secretaries of state and deputy assistant secretaries of state and the like, they're ideological. They're not doing it for the money. In fact, they can make more money in the private sector, and usually do, when a different administration comes in and they have to go find work elsewhere. Then they go and get huge salaries working for defense contractors or private think tanks and things of that sort. These people are highly ideological, and they've spent their careers advancing their own agenda or the agenda of their particular political party, their particular worldview. And you can't expect these people to serve you honestly and competently, you know, when you transition over. So President Trump, unfortunately, has partially authored his own situation. And you can see the appalling example of this, where even the National Security Council staff is untrustworthy. You know, his own staff, you know, there's only about 300 people on the NSC staff, 300 people out of 330 million Americans, all right?
Wow.
And being service on the NSC staff is after the president, you know, one of the most powerful positions in Washington, because you're so close to the White House and you have so much power over the interagency process and the rest. And it's also, and it doesn't stop. Even if a person serves only for like 6 months on the NSC staff, that is so impressive on their resume that they're basically set for life. You know, you can see even on Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, you know, there's these very young people, mostly from the Obama administration, you know, who served sometimes just briefly on the NSC staff, but sometimes they had longer service. But, you know, but they get jobs pulling in millions of dollars as television commentators and the like. So that's why when a president comes in, you know, one way of having his influence last beyond his own terms of office is have people who believe in you and support your policies in those NSC staff positions. You know, because those people, just by virtue of the fact that they've been on the NSC staff, you know, will end up having tremendous influence later on through their books, through the interviews, through the very high-ranking jobs they will hold in corporations. Oftentimes they're selected to be ambassadors and things like that. They're not necessarily the smartest people our country has produced either, because you're on the NSC staff.
You know, that being said,
that's unfortunate. There's a misconception you could just tell from the testimony of that ambassador to Ukraine, for example,
right,
or all three of them, you know, even though they have impressive sounding credentials. If you watch their testimony, if you could endure the whole thing, they're not the brightest bulbs, are they? You know? And indeed, you wonder, how can a person be occupying such a responsible position in the U.S. government and not understand the fundamentals of what our constitutional republic is about, that they serve at the pleasure of the president? The president can do no wrong. So what? I mean, even the Republicans who are defending President Trump, saying there was no quid pro quo, as if that's really important, okay? So what if there was a quid pro quo? It's the president's job to basically use our foreign aid money to get a quid pro quo out of these guys.
Right.
And it,
we don't just toss money.
Presidents
for,
in the past, including President Obama, been at all shy about using foreign aid money to advance, to do good, including for themselves politically and their party politically, as a leader of their party and their particular ideology that they want to advance. They're supposed to do that.
Well, so,
you know, there's nothing illegal at all about it, but people are so stupid, you know, even at that level. Well, maybe they do understand it, but they're hoping that the American people are the stupid
ones.
Well,
that's
the part. The American people don't know how it all works. Now, let me ask you this. He's been in office. The president's been in office now for 3 years. I'm sure he understands now the importance of people in those positions and possibly realizes he made a mistake keeping them on. Why can't he get them replaced and start getting a team together that actually supports what he wants to get done? Are we just lacking people that understand the issues where nobody else can possibly do it but the people that are already in there? Obama didn't have a problem putting all those people in there when he took office.
Yeah, and he fired tons of people.
He fired tons of them. Nobody yelled about that. And why can't Trump do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because my wife, Ruth, and I, we're just talking about this morning, and Ruth is, you know, very intelligent on these matters, and I tease her by saying that Donald Trump is her boyfriend, you know, because she is even more committed to the president than I am, and will defend him even against my criticisms, okay? But her explanation is that I think that this is valid, that, you know, when the president first came in, that, you know, you can think of the ship of state as like a big battleship, and it's been sailing in a particular direction for a long time. And a battleship is a very complicated mechanism. And so you want to change its course, but you can't turn the tiller to the hard right and make it change course, and at the same time replace all of the crew, you know, with people who have never had their hands on the levers of power before. You know, and so you want to sort of do it incrementally. And so that's an excuse, I think, for the first year or two of his, a legitimate excuse for the first year or two. But now I think, especially when it's so obvious that even after he's been 3 years in office and the intelligence community is still conducting basically a coup d'etat, some people want to take hard edges off of that word and call it a soft coup. Well, whether it's a soft coup or a classical
coup,
when you infiltrate people from the CIA onto the National Security Council staff, you know, who worked for Brennan and Biden, all right, you know, when these people are moles, basically, I mean, I think one would have to be fantastically naive to think that these people are just acting out of their own personal conscience.
Oh, no,
they're
actually the last of the great patriots in our country.
Yeah,
we have to,
that's the way they're.
Let's take a break because I got some comments on
that. That is the way that they are cast. And so now, of course, the Democrats have made the impeachment all about, you know, hurting everybody's feelings. But
I want to say something about that, but I guess you have to take a break.
Yeah, we'll,
right?
We'll do that right when we come back.
Yeah, hold that thought.
All right, you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I looked out this morning and the sun was gone. Turned on some music to start my day. And lost myself. Every night and every day now, never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean.
while they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Oh, la da da.
A lot of games people play.
Yeah. Ivory Towers.
Okay, so Dr. Pry, can continue with that thought. We won't derail you.
Yes, like actually it was a thought of yours, Aaron, I wanted to build upon earlier when you had referred to the Ambassador Yovanovitch's giving us a history of Foreign Service officers and people associated with the State Department. People who've lost their lives, like the, you know, heroes of Benghazi, okay, who are tied to the intelligence community and all the rest, which fits in with this theme that you're talking about these people being American heroes and how dare President Trump, you know, overrule or say anything bad about these American heroes. And I thought that was just so appalling because, you know, this ambassador that's been fired from her job is going to be teaching at the University of Georgetown, you know, and she's never broken a fingernail on behalf of her country. On Laura Ingraham, the night after she so testified and compared herself to the heroes of Benghazi, for example, and that's what she was doing. You know, the whole reason for her peroration about these the sacrifices that have been made by people in our intelligence community and people in the Foreign Service was to associate herself, herself and her career with such heroes, which is totally inappropriate. You know, she hasn't done a thing along those lines. If anything, you know, she was betraying her country, you know, by bad-mouthing the President of the United States and resisting the foreign policies that he wanted to implement in Ukraine. And indeed, on Laura Ingraham that night, they had the mother of one of the heroes of Benghazi who had died, and she was. I rather wish Laura hadn't brought her on, because it was so heartrending to see her rendered almost speechless with frustration and anger that here her son was being held up as a hero, not to compliment her son, but protect the interests of the deep state. Of this deep state ambassador, when her experience, the State Department and the intelligence community wouldn't even talk to her, was
yeah.
completely uninterested in what happened to her son, and even casting aspersions on the heroes of Benghazi because they thought it could embarrass Hillary Clinton and interfere with her ambitions to become our next president. These people have no shame, and they are... Well, they have the perfect mindset because they have no shame. And this is just another example of being willing to do and say anything to get power and to win politically. It's very Machiavellian. It's exactly
oh,
the kind of mindset you get from totalitarian movements. And that's, in effect, what we've got, a totalitarian movement in the Democratic Party, which is mirrored also in the deep state, this administrative state, that supports the objectives of the Democratic Party, or at least supports having the deep state in control of everything. So our policy is supposed to be run, our core policy, out of places like the Department of State and, and the Department of Defense, by people who haven't who haven't been elected, many of them not even appointed by our own president, but are people who are holdovers from previous administrations or just permanent civil servants, part of permanent civil service bureaucracy. And we see this problem, this threat to our constitutional republic, not just in Ukraine, but in Turkey, which hopefully we'll have time to talk about later, on EMP protection, on building the wall, on immigration policy, you name it. You know, they have their own ideas on every topic about how it should be done. And their ideas are, well, it should be done the way we were doing it yesterday. And since President Trump is an anti-establishment change kind of guy, because American people, most of us, believe that we need change, that we can't keep going on and doing things the way things were done yesterday, that that's going to result in the destruction of our nation. That's why they're opposing him. You know, they are for business as usual. The only change they want is a change in the direction of increasing their power and their control over every aspect of American life, including our foreign and defense policy.
Right. Yeah, it's a change that they agree with. I mean, somebody else ran for office here not so awful long ago that ran on hope and change. And that was okay then, but now it, when we want to change it the other direction, all of a sudden...
Yeah, all of a sudden the bureaucrats have all
thing.
The answers.
And
how dare we criticize them or replace them?
Right. And
they have a right to those jobs.
I guess I'm really tired of hearing how these people...
Stunning.
Their opinion of what we should be doing, and that's where they're attacking Trump is because of these seasoned veterans, these seasoned
yeah, the career bureaucrats don't like what he's doing, so he has to be impeached, because that's impeachable now.
Yeah, and
yeah, that's right. The, you know, did the American people vote to go to get involved in a war with Russia?
Nope.
To protect Ukraine? I don't think they did. You know, I didn't hear President Trump running on that platform. I thought President Trump ran on a platform that our allies aren't doing enough to defend themselves. And Ukraine isn't actually an American ally, contrary to what they said. They used the phrase strategic partner because Ukraine is not a member of NATO even.
Right.
Well, besides that, Obama sent them nothing. I mean, he wouldn't even airdrop blankets into their country. He made them go fetch them from someplace else. So
Right. They
act like, oh my God, how could we not fall on our sword for these people that we've stood by and done so much for? I'm like, wait a second. For 8 years, we didn't do anything for them, and that was okay. Same career bureaucrats, right?
In fact, it goes back further than Obama. It goes back to the Clinton administration. You know, because at one time, Ukraine had been the third greatest nuclear power in the world. You know, when the Soviet Union broke up and Ukraine became independent, it had one or two strategic rocket forces missile armies located on its territory. So many nuclear weapons, advanced nuclear weapons, that it made it, after Russia and the United States, the third greatest nuclear power in the world, even greater than China and India, China, India, and Pakistan combined, did not have the kind of nuclear firepower that Ukraine alone enjoyed. And in order to get Ukraine to give up its nuclear weapons, and perhaps we shouldn't have asked them to do that, it might not have been a good idea. I mean, I don't think that Russia would have seized Crimea or started a war with Ukraine, all right, if they were a nuclear weapons state. Then it would be too dangerous for them. But Russia was very interested, too, in getting Ukraine to give up its nuclear arsenal. And Bill Clinton convinced them to do it in two ways, by promising that eventually they might be admitted to the European Union and might be admitted to NATO, but that in the interim, the United States and the United Kingdom, the Bucharest Agreement, guaranteed Ukrainian sovereignty and guaranteed to protect their borders. That was under the Clinton administration. And the Ukrainians, all the East European bloc countries, former Warsaw Pact countries, because in that heady time of heady optimism, you know, everybody thought that history had ended and the United States was and the Western democracies were for sure going to be the dominant forces far into the future. That was the way the future was going to go. They had such confidence in us and belief in the United States, and unfortunately they equated Bill Clinton with the United States, a man who is so dishonest he isn't even honest with his wife. But they put their fate in his hands and gave up those nuclear weapons. It wasn't long after that, you know, that Russia, well, by the Obama administration, Russia committed small minor acts of aggression against Georgia and under the Bush administration, but then went big, you know, by seizing Crimea and started this long war. I mean, Russia could roll over Ukraine and take the whole country over tomorrow, but it hasn't wanted to do that. You know, Russia knows that the intelligentsia in European NATO know about the Bucharest Agreement and all the security guarantees that were given a very high-profile way to Ukraine by both the United States and the United Kingdom, the two most powerful members of NATO, at least economically, most powerful. Turkey is actually, after the United States, the most powerful military member of NATO, but maybe we can talk about that later. So what Russia is doing is deliberately crucifying Ukraine in a very public way, year after year, so that the NATO member states and all the world can see that U.S. security guarantees aren't worth the paper they're written on. It would prefer to win without war by psychologically undermining, you know, the confidence of allies in the United States. And it also scaring our European allies, who are very pacifist, very reluctant to pull the trigger on anything, you know. But here Russia is clearly willing to engage in a protracted act of aggression, killing many thousands of people, and blooding its troops, by the way. I mean, for Russia, Ukraine is sort of a protracted military exercise. You know, we keep cycling its special forces and little green men in and out of there, and it's a gigantic training exercise that gets tens of thousands of their people, you know, trained on how to fight a war. That is invaluable, to have blooded veteran troops who've been in combat. You know, except for the United States, almost no, you know, European member of NATO has anything like the combat experience that Russia has given to its armed forces by using Ukraine as a punching bag.
Well, that's a kind of an interesting thing to consider. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and we have him as our hostage for the second hour, so we won't be trying to wrap this up in 6 minutes in case you're freaking out. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
You ever love someone so much you thought you lived?
I was born, six gun in my hand. Behind a gun, I make my final stand. Hey, it's why they call me.
So, Dr. Pry, why all of a sudden the, I don't know, just the new narrative? I think these guys, it's almost like in this impeachment thing, they're counting on the fact that nobody really knows what's in the Constitution. Nobody really understands what's been going on in foreign policy. No one has access to any history, and no one's going to go check.
Yes, they are counting on that. People who are well read in the Federalist Papers will know that you know, the provision for Congress to impeach a president almost didn't make it. There were many of the founders who were nervous about giving the Congress that power, precisely because they were afraid that if the country became polarized into various factions, you know, the way the Roman Republic did, that unscrupulous people would then be willing to use any tool, including impeachment, that impeachment could be used as a powerful weapon against a president, and that it could become commonplace to end up impeaching presidents. And I'm afraid that that's where we are going to go. You know, the Democrats have created a new standard that almost makes it necessary that regardless of suppose the Republicans lose the next election, you know, unfortunately, there's you have to fight fire with fire. And logically, if the Democrats succeed in creating this new tool, this new weapon, and using impeachment to bring down the Trump administration, if the Republicans are logical, they have to do the same thing against the Democrats. Now, unfortunately, the Republican Party is, and I say unfortunately only from a tactical point of view, the Republican Party historically has been so weak and doesn't go where Democrats go, which is one of the reasons our country has moved so far to the left. You know, because it's like playing a chess game against an adversary, and you have agreed that there are certain moves you will not make, giving them an inherent systemic advantage in the struggle that goes on. And that's why the Democrats have been so successful in advancing their agenda, and the Republicans so unsuccessful in advancing theirs. And tactically, it's necessary. Strategically, it's tragic. And the net effect, again, brings us down the road where we cease to be a constitutional republic, you know, because the Constitution isn't meant to be abused in that way, to be used for partisan political purposes. You know, the impeachment power is one of the greatest powers the Congress has, and, you know, it was provided only for very extreme conditions. I mean, the reason it was provided is because, you know, looking back at Roman history, there were people like Nero and Caligula, all right, that came up and somehow the Roman Senate was powerless to do anything against them. And impeachment was eventually provided, you know, for the possibility of such people coming to power. Bill Clinton is probably the closest we came to having a Caligula in charge. But people who committed, you know, gross violations of law and custom, not for political purposes, and that clearly is what this is. I don't believe the Democrats themselves believe the hogwash that they're trying to sell to the American people. It's all about politics, and it's all about grasping for power.
Well, it's embarrassing at this point. I mean, I don't know how they can sit up there and push this garbage that they're trying to make people believe when it's obviously not true. I know it.
Millions of people are believing it, and that's the danger. You know, they are doing it because they think it will pay off. That it'll pay off with their base. They have their flank is protected by the mainstream liberal media, and unfortunately, as you noted yourselves, most people don't read. I mean, 90% of our people are sort of politically illiterate about the Constitution, about our own history.
But even simple things like Adam Schiff saying that the fake whistleblower came to his office and all that stuff, I mean, that's all right there on tape, and then he goes bananas in the hearing and says that that's all a lie.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, there are all those college students, the Antifa types, all these college professors that teach them, that want us to be a socialist system. It's all lying in a good cause from their point of view.
Right.
Oh.
Because it doesn't matter if it's true or not. All that matters is advancing the so-called progressive agenda, which is basically the socialist agenda, which is basically the communist agenda. And, you know, that for them, the ends justifies the means. You know, these guys are acting the way their political base wants them to act. You know, they don't care about justice for Trump or fairness for the Republicans. From their point of view, anybody who voted for Trump or anybody who votes for the Republican Party is an enemy of the people, is on the wrong side of history, that we're Nazis. We're like Nazis, and we deserve whatever we get, including violence. That's where we are. That's why this is so dangerous. It's not just a breakdown in civility, as some people would have it. We've really, and I blame the Republicans for this because of their weakness. You know, the Republicans deserve a lot of blame for this, because they've let the Democrats get away with this,
right?
You know, for decades, and they've ignored cultural conservatives. They've allowed the religious and people of faith to be hounded out of the public square. They won't even defend President Trump's and Republican voters who are savagely assaulted on streets and can't speak at universities. They've allowed the universities to be taken over. They've sat back and allowed, you know, we've got judges that are clearly political and are rendering political judgments. And even a Republican-appointed justice, John Roberts, is living in a fantasy world that that once you become a justice, that political party and political affiliation and whoever appointed you doesn't matter, which is a complete lie. You know, the death of freedom comes from believing in lies like that and not facing facts. You know, and you know that's where we are.
Well, what really scares me is when this impeachment thing goes down in flames, and it will. There's just no way he'll get impeached. What are they capable of doing next? I mean, and you know, we've talked about, you know, when Trump gets a second term. I mean, their hair's going to catch on fire. They're going to go absolutely bonkers. And what are they capable of doing?
Well, I agree with you. You know, the left has this fantasy, and President Trump has joked about it, about the idea that he should have more than one term of office. But many of them on MSNBC and elsewhere have seriously commented that, you know, is Trump going to accept if he's defeated in the next election? Will he ever resign, or are we stuck with him? Now, we all know that's a fantasy.
Sure.
They also had a fantasy like that about Nixon, you know, that the left and the Democrats were afraid that Nixon would not leave office. There's an example. Now, Nixon wasn't impeached, okay, but there's an example of where the Republicans failed the American people. They should have stood by Nixon. You know, what he did was not really an impeachable offense. You know, he had loyalty to the Watergate burglars, and he didn't have any personal knowledge that was happening, you know. But the fact that the Republicans caved to the Democrats, you know, legitimized this as a political tool that they could use, and they've threatened to use it all along, and now they are using it, you know, against this president. And I wonder what's going to happen, you know, when the Inspector General Horowitz's report,
yes,
long-awaited report, the long-delayed report.
You know what? When we come back at the top of the next hour, we do need to tell people how the Inspector General reports work, because that's yet another thing that they're shading, counting on the fact that nobody really knows how that happens and how those reports are handled. So let's... Maybe we could start with that. We'll start with Horowitz the next hour. Our guest has been Dr. Peter Vincent Price. He'll be with us this next hour. We've got to take a quick break for the news and whatnot. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.